Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. Last week, we talked with Pulitzer Prize winner Daniel Yergin about his recent book, The New Map, Energy, Climate, and the Clash of Nations. This week, we hear from Caldecott Medal-winning author and illustrator Uri Shulevitz about his new illustrated memoir, Chance, Escape from the Holocaust, presented in partnership with the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. This conversation took place October 13th, 2020, and was recorded live via Zoom. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
We're grateful to all of you for being here and for valuing the past, present, and future of American writing. My name is Allison Sansoni, and I'm the program director here at the museum. Tonight's program is the latest in the Jean and John Rowe program series, My America, Immigrant and Refugee Writers Today. It is presented in conjunction with the exhibit of the same name, which can be viewed at our museum on Michigan Avenue or online at my-america.org. The exhibit and series honors the contributions to American writing from those Americans who came here or whose parents came here from worlds away. Tonight, we're honored to be joined by the Illinois Holocaust Museum in presenting a story of refuge from war, survival in the face of impossible odds, and the hope of freedom. Uri Shulevitz is one of America's most beloved children's book writers and illustrators. The Caldecott Medal-winning author and artist's newest book is Chance, the true story of his family's escape from Nazi occupation in Warsaw, Poland. Uri has won 3 Caldecott honors for The Treasure, Snow, and How I Learned Geography. His other books include One Monday Morning, Dawn, So Sleepy Story, and the instructional guide Writing with Pictures, How to Write and Illustrate Children's Books. He's joining us tonight from New York City. He'll be interviewed tonight by one of his biggest fans, Linda Sonnen, who is the director of public programs and special projects for the Illinois Holocaust Museum. I'm going to ask them both to come back into the room and join us.
Good. Hello.
Welcome to both of you.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Allison, and thank you to the American Writers Museum for inviting me. This is a huge honor for me. As you said, I have loved Uri's work for so many years, and I'm so excited to be here with all of you and with him. So, Uri, if you're ready, we're going to dive into some questions.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let's see. To begin, if you would you share some of your influences, both in writing and in the artistic spaces?
Okay. I will begin by talking about, as kind of an introduction to this question, what my goal is and what I love. I love simple words that create a picture. And I also am a great believer in clear communication. I believe very strongly that writing should not be a puzzle, and that when one reads a passage, one shouldn't need to read it several times in order to comprehend what it says. It should be something that was crystal clear, transparent. And so I would like to mention some influences. I mean, since our time is limited, I will only mention a few in a minute. But I also would like to mention in this context that I view style as a point of arrival rather than a point of departure. What I mean by that is that one doesn't have a style. At least I am not beginning with having a style and then writing what I had to say, but rather the other way, that I start writing, and when I'm finished writing it, that is my style. So that's the point of arrival. Now, to give you some examples of what I mean by clear writing that I admire and which is my goal, which I may never achieve, but that's quite all right. But I do have something that I am striving for. And also, I can use it as a measuring stick to gauge where I am in my own writing. Here, for example, is a Chinese haiku. So old, so soon. And here's another one, a Japanese haiku. A heron on snow is hard to distinguish, but the ravens, how they stand out.
Beautiful.
And another example is the first stanza of a poem by Victor Hugo. And I'll read it first in French so that you can savor, if you don't, even if you don't understand French, the music of the poem. Mur, ville et port, asile de mort, mer grise ou brise, la brise tout d'or. And here is a rough translation, simply for the words which I did. Walls, town, and port, asylum of the dead, gray seas where breaks a breeze, everything sleeps. Now, I would like to read a short passage from my own writing so you can gauge for yourselves, you know, and see how I did my best. As well as I can. And this is a passage from my book, Chance. For days as the bombs fell, my mother and I stayed inside. Although the doors and windows were tightly shut, a noise from hell filled every room of our small apartment. The terrifying whistling of gunfire and explosions of bombs was unbearable. My only refuge was drawing. Always drawing. Drawing, drawing, drawing. I drew stick figures. Stick figures marching back and forth on pieces of father's old newspapers, filling up any empty space on the page I could find. Each time I heard an explosion, I closed my eyes and held the paper in the air. Now, my pencil became an airplane, flying at top speed, point first, piercing round holes into the paper. It became a game of chance. Will the stick figures evade that frightful pencil plane? Will they be hit? Will we be hit? Are we going to die? Will we starve to death? Our food was almost gone. Now, the ideal would have been if one could, if I could communicate whatever it is that I am feeling and I'm seeing directly to the reader, without any intermediary. But this is impossible. We need the words being the intermediary and the tools or the scaffold in order to convey what the writer has to say. But we should be aware as well that while we need the help of words, the words themselves are also an obstacle. Just like the scaffold is an obstacle between you and the building. And so, as a result of that, call it my philosophy of writing, if you like, that as a result of this view of words, therefore, the logical conclusion is to use as few words as really needed. And so, and also, I don't want to contribute to word pollution either, because there are so many words being thrown around.
So with that beautiful explanation of how you start out, can you talk a little bit and share with us your writing process?
Well, as you know, I started out by writing picture books and illustrating them. When I started toting around my portfolio, the first publisher I went to see, and this was in the early 1960s, I went to Harper and Row, and the first editor I saw was Susan Hirschman. She was the assistant of the great editor Ursula Nordstrom. And I showed her my portfolio, and she liked the pictures. But then she said, why don't you write your own story? What I was hoping for, I was hoping that she will give me a book to illustrate, because I only thought of myself as an artist, as a painter, and not as someone who writes. I was very intimidated. I mean, you know, writing was something that was very intimidating to me, because I believed and I thought that words were something only for people who had special ways with words. It seemed to me a kind of a magical ability. And so I tried to find an excuse so that I wouldn't need to write my own story. And I said, well, my English is bad. I have been speaking it only for less than 4 years. So she said, well, fix your English. When I finally ran out of all excuses, I had no choice. I went home and I tried writing. And then I brought in my feeble attempts to Susan Hirschman, and she would say, it's too slight. And so I went back home, I tried another one, and each time it was the same thing. And after some months, I finally came up with my first book, The Moon in My Room. But then, as I kept on writing, I realized something which was very important. I realized that the what came before the how. And this was something which actually was confusing me, and I'll explain what I mean by that.
Please.
What I had to say was the most important thing, and how to say it was of secondary importance. And I was confusing between the two. And so now, once I realized that, I was on my way. My process basically of writing goes like this. I start thinking about the subject. That starts activating my brain. And the brain acts almost like, you know, like a magnet attracting other thoughts on that subject. And that can come to me at any place, at any time, unexpected. Walking on the street, being in the shower. But actually what I found, the best time for me to actually think about these things was when I went to bed and I was in the state between being awake and being asleep. And so it was a kind of state of relaxation, and that's when actually most of the ideas came many times. Then I would take notes. I would take notes actually through that whole process. And once I had the notes, I would start writing. So that was the end of this, of my process of writing. And then, of course, when I had written it, I would rewrite. And it didn't come easy to me. Nothing came easy to me. I worked very hard, but I loved doing it. So as the Chinese saying goes, if you don't want to work a day in your life, do what you love. And so I didn't work. And I did what I loved.
Well, that's beautiful. And so glad you had such a wonderful editor to begin with who encouraged you to share what's in you with all of us. The great thing. So that was general.
I have a wonderful editor right now as well that deserves much credit for what he did for my book, Chance.
Well, Chance is a fabulous book, and I'd love to explore a few of the major themes with you right now. Let's begin with the notion of being or being perceived as other or as an outsider. How did you explore this in the story?
Well, I want to tell you that my history of being an outsider in a nutshell. I was born in Poland. Mm-hmm. And in Poland, I was a dirty Jew. So then when finally I got to Turkestan in the Republic of Kazakhstan, which was then a part of the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. I graduated to being a dirty Polak. Then finally, when I got to Paris, I became a sale étranger, a dirty foreigner. Mm-hmm. This was something, a title that was given to me by my classmates. And when I left Paris to go outside to visit relatives who were spending the summer in some village outside of Paris, there I became a, what the kids called me there, sale parigot. Parigot is the slang for Paris. So I became a dirty Parisian. So it's only when I left Paris that I became a Parisian. Dirty, but still a Parisian. So anyway, and then when I returned to Paris, I resumed being a dirty Parisian. But I must emphasize that this was something which was came from my classmates, but not from the adults, I mean, not from the teachers and not from just other French people. And so actually my stay in Paris was wonderful, and I spent a lot of it actually, as I talk in the book, by myself, and I had no complaints. So once I came to New York, and New York City, the city of outsiders, I felt welcome, and I felt at home. But I not only felt at home, I felt as if I was in paradise. Why? Because there were museums. I was hungry to go and see the originals of the masters of the Renaissance. I could spend hours sitting in a room in the company of Rembrandt and other great masters, because at that time in the 60s, very few people came to the museum. And I was able to go to libraries that were free. I haven't experienced that in any other country I've been to. And then the Comédie Française came from Paris. The Commedia dell'arte came to New York from Italy. And the Kabuki came from Japan. And I didn't have to travel to Paris or to Italy or to Japan in order to see them. And so that's why I felt like I was in paradise. And you didn't have to be super rich, you know, in order to enjoy all those things. So this is my story of being an outsider. And so finally, I mean, there were only two places in the world where I felt welcome and I did not feel like an outsider. That was in New York and in Israel.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Chance, of course, depicts true events from you and your family's journey during World War II. Can you talk a little bit about this aspect of your life?
Well, I was born in Warsaw, Poland. Mm-hmm. And I was 4 years old when the Nazis invaded Poland. And so to save ourselves, and that's why I'm not considering myself a Holocaust survivor, but rather as a refugee, because we were not in a ghetto as the rest of our family was. And I was not in an extermination camp as other relatives of ours perished, because we escaped before all that started. So we escaped to Bialystok, which was in the past a Polish city, but now it was part of the Soviet Union. And then we traveled to Grodno, which was in Belarus, because my father had worked there. And eventually we were sent by the Soviet authorities to settlement Jura, all the way up in the north by the White Sea in Arkhangelskaya Oblast, which is the region and whose capital is Arkhangelsk, or Archangel in English. And then finally, when we were liberated from that camp, we went south to Turkestan, a city in Kazakhstan, also a part of the Soviet Union at the time. And relatively speaking, not far from Iran and Afghanistan. So it was quite a journey of extremes. And then finally, when war came to an end, we left Turkestan, we left Russia. It was quite a journey to go back, as I described in the book. And finally, we came back to Poland, and I can say that we were welcomed with open arms. And so we went to Germany, and we stayed in a DP camp after the war. And when Father found out that, because he was working then as a journalist, and he found out that his brother, there were four brothers, and two of them were killed during the Holocaust, and his other brother, who had fought in the Spanish Civil War, was living in Paris. So we went to join him, and we stayed with them. And we lived in France for about 2.5 years, and then we went to Israel. And there I lived happily for 10 years, but I wanted to continue to study art and to have access to original paintings, because all I could see while I was in Israel is in magazines, reproductions, and in books. And some of them were not even in color. They were in black and white. So that was, in a nutshell, the journey. And then there was an inner journey, which can be summarized as follows. From a picture book of 32 pages to chance, a memoir of a little over 320 pages.
Is quite a journey. You traveled many, many places. And in chance, the idea of home, place, belonging was also a major theme of the story. Can you talk a little bit about how you examined that in chance in the book?
Well, to say what home means to me, it's a place. I guess it means that probably to everybody. I mean, but I'm just speaking for myself. It means a place where I feel safe, where I'm at peace, and when I'm enjoying what I'm doing or where I am. And so, although in spite of all those troubles, I still had a home. And there was drawing. And there were also stories my mother told me. And so that was the home away from home. And in spite of all the hardships, that is something which couldn't be taken away from me. And the hardest part of the war, when we were in, where we spent most of the time in Turkestan, was the hunger. It was painful to everybody. It was painful to my parents as well. But I was a growing kid. And so the hunger pains might have been even more raw and strong. And my mother's stories that she was telling me would distract me and ease those pains. And that was very important to me. So from there, actually, you know, that great love that I have both of drawing as well of stories. And I must say that of all the stories that my mother told me, and she told me whatever she could remember, if she didn't remember the ending, she would make it up and make up some stories or films that she had seen, stories she had read or she had heard. There was one that never bored me, and I kept asking her to repeat it again and again and again. What are we going to eat after the war? And she would tell me we would have as many rolls with butter as we would like. Mm-hmm. And that was harder for me to believe in that time than any kind of fairy tale. It was the most wonderful story that I heard.
And tell me, do you eat rolls with butter now?
Now I have to watch my cholesterol.
Oh.
So now I can have the rolls, all the rolls I would like, and I can have as much butter as I would like, but now I have to watch it. So it's kind of, you know, the irony of things.
It certainly is. So as someone who to go back to that very touching story that you share in Chance, as someone who has experienced life as a refugee from so many places and as an immigrant, what does it mean to be an American to you?
You know, the amazing thing about to me is the fact that as soon as I came to New York, I felt at home. So what was amazing about it is that it came so naturally to feel American, I didn't even need to think about it. Because I was accepted.
Yes.
I made friends. You know, what else can I ask for? I mean, you know, so there wasn't something that I had to kind of undergo through some kind of process, because it felt so natural, and it was something which was so immediate.
And it seems from your story that you also have a facility of language. And so that must have made it a little bit easier to come to America. And with all those languages that you had, why become a writer?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, is my two big loves were drawing and stories. So it was natural. I mean, when I discovered at age 25, I never saw a picture book before. So I was 25 when I saw a picture book for the first time. And when I saw what it was, that it was words and pictures. So that was something which was natural for me to really, that this is what I wanted to do. And so that's how I became a writer, as I explained earlier. And also I would like to mention that actually I didn't have the luxury of having any books when I was growing up. And it wasn't until I was 10 years old that actually I got my first book, that I became the happy possessor of a book. And if I would have had books earlier, I would have been the happiest kid alive. And a nice encyclopedia, I mean, this would have been beyond words. But none of that was available. It was a question then of only of survival and how to be able to eat. And so there was no, those were other those books and all those other things were only luxuries that were beyond me.
That's beautiful. And it's very telling the importance of books and getting them out to children everywhere. So I love that you shared that, as it's just so important to get kids to read and have the opportunity to own some books. So, another question that has come up is the importance of language and that play of language and art. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I used to speak six languages, but Polish and Russian I forgot because I haven't been using it. And that is very unfortunate. But I still speak and, read four languages beside English, French, Hebrew, and Yiddish. And what is wonderful about it is that it gives me direct access to works because, being able to read those works in the original is so much, such a blessing. And so this is something which I very much appreciate. And I find that it enriches me and for which I'm grateful.
Thank you. We have time to turn back to Chance for another question. So I'm going to go back to the book for a second. And much of the story focuses on the role of family and community in your journey. How did you come to convey that in the book?
I was very lucky that actually my parents were there. It is true that my father wasn't there for a period, as you can learn in my story in the book. But most of the time he was. And if I didn't have my parents, I wouldn't have survived. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. Because after the war, when we were back in Poland and I was in a children's home, Jewish children's home, the teacher, instead of teaching, asked kids to tell about their experiences. And there was a young boy, he was a little older than I don't know, at that point maybe he was, I'm not sure whether he was, I can't tell, and I wish I could remember every single thing he was telling us. And he was an orphan, and how he survived was actually incredible. And, how he told us, and I wouldn't have been able to do that. I don't believe that. How he traveled on trains on the roof, and he would have to tie himself with his belt to something on the roof there so that there were other people who could have kicked him down, to his death. And because there were a lot of bad people.
Yes.
And how he managed to survive was unbelievable. And for 2 days, he kept telling his story. And the teacher forgot to teach, actually. So anyway, so again, all I can say is that the fact that I had my parents, I survived. Otherwise, I wouldn't have.
You tell a story, and I'm hoping you will share it now with everyone, about your name, what it means, if you, where it comes from, your name, Uri, why you were named that, and I'll ask my follow-up after you tell that part of the story.
Okay, thank you. This is, of course, I've been told that because I couldn't remember it. I was a little baby. When I was brought from the hospital after I was born to my parents' apartment, the walls had had wallflower, paper. What did they call it? I can't think of it. Anyway, there were these
flowers on the wallpaper.
Yeah, flowers on the wallpaper. Thank you. So I was lying in my crib, and I was watching intently these flowers. Mm-hmm. When my father saw that, he decided I'm going to be an artist. So he told mother, our little son is going to be an artist. We should call him Uri, after the father of the first artist mentioned in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, they agreed about that, and so I became Uri. But at the time, I had no idea that actually my name will play such a role in what happened to us later. And in an indirect way, it saved our lives. Why? Because when they came, when we were already in the Soviet Union, there came an announcement from the authorities that either we will get Russian passports, mm-hmm. or... I mean, our choice was either getting Russian passports or be sent back to occupied Poland, which we did not want to do. And so my father went to the passport office. And when the clerk asked, for the names of his name, my mother's name, and then finally, children, yes, I have a little son. What's his name? His name is Uri. So then, he exclaimed, Uri, not in a complimentary way. My father asked, is there something wrong, secretary? He said, is there something wrong? It's terribly wrong. You must have named him after anti-Soviet poet, Uri Tsvi Greenberg. And my father pleaded with him and said it's got nothing to do with him, and that I was named after a biblical Uri. But at that point, it was useless, and finally, we didn't get Russian passports. So we ended up without papers. As a result, we ended up in settlement era. And when the Nazis invaded Russia, we were far in the north. And so when the Nazis invaded Russia, they never reached that far. And also later, when we were in Turkestan again, we were very far from the front. And finally, the Nazis were stopped at Stalingrad, as you can find out in history. And so they never reached actually where we were. And that's why actually we survived. And so all that kind of was, what was interesting really is when I analyzed, you know, the little details of our wanderings and our lives, to see how something small can play such a big role and how things develop. And so this is really the story about the role of my name.
Quite an apt name for an artist.
Thank you.
Well, I am sure that both your art and your words will continue to have an impact on this generation and many to come. This was so lovely to spend time with you today, learning from you, talking with you. I thank you so much for being here. And I thank the audience, and I know Allison wants to come and pop back in and give us a few messages.
Thank you very much.
I just want to say thank you so much for your questions. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you both. For a wonderful conversation, and you know, I think we all learned a great deal from hearing the two of you. So I want to thank everyone in the audience for coming tonight. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, for our final episode of the year, we talk with NBC News and MSNBC correspondent Jacob Soboroff about his book Separated: Inside an American Tragedy, which relays the human toll of the Trump administration's policy to separate immigrant children from their families. Now go, be inspired, and find the might of a writer in yourself.